Throughout the U.S., sport is making a comeback. Youth sports are headed back to the fields. The Pac-12 is readying for a return to football. And Major League Baseball teams are headed towards the World Series. Across all of these events, the impacts of the pandemic and calls for racial justice continue. So how are Americans feeling all about this? The Global Sport Institute recently conducted a national survey in partnership with OH Predictive Insights. The survey looked at a multiple of categories, including college sport, youth sport, professional sport, COVID-19, the desire to attend high-level sporting events, and race in professional sport. Joining me to discuss the results of the poll are our own Ken Shropshire, CEO of the Global Sport Institute, and Mike Noble, Chief Pollster and Managing Director of OH Predictive Insights. I'm Andrew Ramsamy, and this is the Global Sport Matters Podcast. So joining me now are Ken Shropshire, the CEO of the Global Sport Institute, and Mike Noble from OH Predictive Insights. Gentlemen, welcome.
Thank you.
So, Mike, for those who don't know what polling is, could you kind of give us a oversimplified morning after the VP debate without having to hurt our heads? What is polling?
Okay. So probably the simplest way to put polling, because you can go deep down the rabbit hole on this topic, is that think about it this way. If you're trying to measure a population, do you have to go and ask all of those folks? So let's say Arizona, the roughly 7 million residents we have here, do you need to actually survey all of them and get their opinions? No, you don't, because if you do a random sample of a population, you can get basically statistically, you can get maybe 500, 600, 700 responses. And that would be a better way than going out to, again, ask everyone. So statistically, you can ultimately get sentiment and have it reflective of a population. So, people's voices can be heard.
And right now there's a lot of polling going on right now because of the election and where we're at in the year, but you do polling year round, right? This is not just something that's limited to this election cycle, right?
Yeah. Another one, much to not popular belief. A lot of people, they go, oh, you must be really busy with political stuff. I go, well, we're a nonpartisan quantitative and qualitative research firm. And actually, we don't even do any campaigns at all, actually. So what we are essentially is kind of like ESPN for politics is probably the best way to describe it, is that red team's up, red team's down. And just kind of, again, I think there's just a lot of information. There's two sides pushing agendas. And what we really espouse to do is basically tell people, well, what's the reality? Like, what's an honest look at it? Because, I think people want to know where things are at, but also where the numbers are moving and why.
So is your company the company that calls me at 7 p.m. on a Thursday evening wanting to know my opinion about something?
Correct.
All right. 100%. So now we know who the boogeyman is here in the conversation.
Correct. I do get a little bit more phone calls. It's funny. We do hundreds of thousands of surveys a year. And it's interesting. I notice when we get about closer to election day, I definitely start getting calls from folks. And I have to explain to them. I go, hey, this is not my opinion. This is the 600 sample of Arizonans that's balanced and reflective based by gender, age, party affiliation. Anyways, you go into that. But right now, folks are just, again, it's the political fervor is very high. But that political fervor is really, I think, bleeding into a lot of different aspects of, I think, society, culture, and business right now.
So we decided to partner with you, Mike, and OH Predictive Insights to do a poll right now on how Americans are feeling about a variety of different topics across sport. And Ken, I'm wondering, as we were putting together this poll, what were some of the things that were kind of driving some of the questions that we pulled together in partnering with OH Predictive Insights?
Well, we're trying to think of the big issues that people want to know about now, and issues that actually impact their life. And also to get a feel for what other people are thinking about, the same issues that they may be thinking about. So for us this year, the big issues, of course, have been COVID, race, And sports issues tied to those, you know, will you go to sporting events? How are your kids doing in this whole moment? How are you parenting in this moment with kids? So, you know, we talk about this a lot as scholars, and polling is an important place to give us an idea of what the issues really are. I think in a couple of instances, we found out, you know, that's no big deal, that there's some uniformity in opinion. And some there's actual conflict. So to find a polling enterprise that is nonpartisan, that will actually go out and do the work in kind of the true academic tradition of let's see what the answer is, as opposed to we're the polling enterprise to support the continuation of college football.
Yeah, I was just saying, it was interesting too with the results is that we were so excited, being an ASU alumni myself. Go Devils. And anyway,
team night. Now, Mike, you're on a podcast, so no one could see that you put up your fork.
Oh, I got you. Oh, yes.
This is Mike's first time on a podcast. So
the cat is out of the bag.
The cat is out of the bag. They cannot see you, Mike.
I was thinking about this on the way to this interview, and I go, you know, I've done thousands of interviews, and I this is literally my first podcast, and I couldn't be more privileged to be on this one. And also, it was a privilege when ASU-GSI reached out to, again, just kind of have a pulse nationally. And that's what we basically set out to do, is a national survey and broke it out by the key geographic regions, just because, you know, some of the popularity or sentiment on sport can be different in the Northeast compared to, let's say, the West Coast, for example. And so when we're looking at that, some of the things that stuck out too is that, you know, especially with where different sports were from favorability wise, I think NFL was kind of seen as the predominant league, and compared to MLB was, I think, third, and second was NCAA football.
And before we get into the polling results, I mean, would you both agree that this is probably one of the most once in a lifetime moments where effectively, collectively, a majority of sports are trying to return. They're all trying to return at the same time. We're doing this in the midst of COVID-19. We're doing this in the midst of an election. We're doing this in the midst of 2020. I mean, you just add it all up at the end of the day. But before we get into the results, you got the results, what did you think we would have seen had we not done a poll?
I think, you know, I think with the results that at least that I saw, that there are certain things that we confirmed, but also I think what it highlighted, and what's lucky is that I'm not just looking at sports data, also looking at economic data. We have a very robust consumer confidence survey we run, also a lot of public opinion or public affairs polling. And what we realized is that this 100-year pandemic that, you know, I don't think any of us, A, expected, but B, have much experience in that, because I'm only 36. So that's probably not, we don't have much to glean upon. However, we've seen that trends, whether it's from the travel industry, for example, has taken about a 60-70% hit on that massive industry. And what all the research shows, and it also came up here in this, is that, really, it's to return, to expedite that. The return is going to be long no matter what. It's going to be about 2-3 years out to even get back to normal levels. But what we found in the trends, and we found here, the way to expedite that is for folks to feel comfortable and safe. And if they're not able to feel comfortable and safe, that will prolong getting back to the sense of normalcy.
Yeah, you know, for me, Andrew, I think the demographic divide was bigger on more issues than I thought. And when I say that, there were certainly a couple of times when the over 65 crowd, the age had an impact on the answer and the way issues were viewed. I mean, race in particular, which is not that surprising, but in some ways a confirmation of what you might think about society. I think that, you know, for me too, as much as I've looked at polling, I hadn't focused so much on regional differences. So the way that Mike and his team broke that out is very interesting to me, and especially, you know, you begin to think about the Atlantic region, kind of the New York, Philly, DC kind of territory, compared to the South, compared to the West, and you break the West up, you got the Pacific, you know, area, which is more of the, you know, Oregon, Washington. You think about the specific problems they've had with COVID and how that might influence their answers. So it's really, it really is a puzzle to try to work through. So some of it was, the deeper you went, the more surprising some of the answers became, but you could develop some rationale, and now that you have kind of the answer on the front end, you kind of develop a rationale to match.
And one quick thing to add on that is what also we've seen trend-wise overall is that we've seen a very strong connection between for regional, because again, this virus, there's been different areas impacted. Look at us here in Arizona, for example. We were very much left almost untouched in the beginning compared to cities like New York that were really getting pummeled until it did ultimately come here. And then we, at one point, we were leading the nation in COVID infection rates. But what we've seen is that there's a very much direct relation between public sentiment and where the rate, that infection rate is, because it's one of the most reported on items. It's really hard to get, I think, through any given day without hearing your daily COVID updates of infections, deaths, et cetera. And so we've also seen that the trend is that the better we can keep the infection rate down, the sooner we'll be able to get back to normal compared to, again, we see some of these spikes, flare-ups, ultimately the public sours on that, but also everything gets affected from sport to gyms opening to childcare. So again, it really disrupts people's lives.
You know, Andrew, the one thing before we get away from this, and I know we'll get into details. I mean, the one thing that did surprise me as I was kind of reviewing this last night, kind of monumentally, and I don't recall exactly the question, but essentially the outcome that I got was, and Mike, maybe this is one that jumped out at you, was that fathers were more concerned than mothers about kids going back and the level of protections that were in place. That wasn't my house. I mean, come to these things with your own background and my, and I didn't take time to look at how severe the difference was, or maybe I was misreading it. But so things like that, and again, I didn't look at the regional differences and the like. But it's something that gets you to think, gets you to push past maybe stereotypes. Every father wasn't like my father. every father's not like me. I don't know. So, but that was one thing that jumped out at me too. I just while I'm thinking about it.
Oh, you're 100% right. And that's where these things will either confirm certain gut theories, but there's also ones, it's a bit of a head scratcher, but it's also when we go and dig down into it, what's driving that number? Is that, you know, mainly more among, African-American and Hispanic Latino voters? Is that more among white college educated? We don't, again, looking at those drivers or more regional drivers to that. So again, it's been, it'll be fascinating as we keep a pulse on this.
All right. So let's actually jump in and start to deconstruct some of the polling, and we'll start with youth sports and what you were talking about there, Ken. Right now the comfort level of parents sending children back to sports during this pandemic is a top concern. And we saw in the results that 2 in 3 children are participating or have participated in youth sports. Basketball, soccer, and football are the ones that children participate in most. And 66% of the respondents said yes, that their kids do participate in youth sports. And what we saw was that in the Pacific region, it had the highest participation rate currently right now for youth sports, while the Western region had the lowest. So kind of break it down there. We're seeing, you know, almost 2/3 of parents saying that their kids are involved in youth sports, but yet we're seeing some pretty stark differences in those regions. Mike, could you kind of break it down? And you know, started to talk about this already, how the pandemic has kind of made its way through the U.S. and how it's hit different parts of the country in different ways. And then this kind of like shift in terms of timing of how this is now hit. What do you think is going on there?
Well, yeah, I think you see that there's a couple of different breaks or interesting takeaways. One is just top line overall is that, you know, of the, you know, two of you mentioned, Andrew, is that 2 in 3 parents of children have participated in youth sports. However, 2 in 3 parents do not feel as comfortable as before the pandemic for their children to participate. But also we saw that, regionally that you look at that participation rate, the lowest rate actually regionally was in the Western region, which is composed of, you know, Arizona, Nevada, up towards Montana and the Dakotas. And so you see that it was actually at a very low rate, but the highest of the participation, the top sport was basketball. Number two was soccer and then swimming. But hands down, half of those that respondents that are participating in youth sport are, you know, half were basketball. But then you look at conversely that the highest actually was in the Pacific. So California, Washington, and Oregon. And the top three there was in the top one actually was not basketball. It's soccer at 45% compared to basketball number two and football number three. And then you look at, of course, they're on the East Coast or in the Atlantic region in the northeastern portion of the U.S. We see that, you know, 67% participation rate and top sport there, soccer as well. Number two, basketball. Number three, swimming. So you see that there's different participation rates from the low end to the high end right now of how this is affecting participation rates and also their proclivity to go back.
Is there something to extrapolate there, Ken, that a lot of these sports that do rank high are outdoor sports versus sports that are indoors like basketball? Do you think parents are making that connection or is it just an anomaly? Not an anomaly, but just a trend overall in sport?
No, I think outdoor is a real impact. I mean, if it's outdoors, you're more likely to feel comfortable letting your kid participate. And I think, too, one more thing I was trying to read between the lines on, in the West, there's a lot of outdoor basketball, right? It's not necessarily you're in a gym. So you're running up and down the floor, you're playing on Venice Beach, whatever it might mm-hmm. be. So that may be an underlying factor. And anyway, you think about future polls, that, you know, maybe we should say indoor versus outdoor basketball mm-hmm. to get that distinction. You know, swimming is the one that's you know, very interesting to me as a child of the tail end of the polio era, where pools were closed and all those sorts of problems, and the idea of catching it in a public pool. I know my, you know, one of my initial concerns in my physical fitness was, you know, can I continue to swim? And it took a while for me to get back into the pool. So I was sort of surprised at how high swimming was, you know, hovering around third in most of the region. So kind of interesting from that standpoint. And some of it is which, you know, we know the moment we did this, but the flow of where COVID is most intense at the moment the question is asked certainly has an impact.
And we see too that the of the sports of the top ones that the survey showed that their kids were participating in football, even though NFL, when we were testing different, you know, what's more popular, NCAA, MLB, you know, NFL definitely is king still. However, it is a look at in the plains. So that's the Texas middle southern portion of America, but then also in the southeast region. In that Florida, Carolina, Virginia, Georgia area, football is actually number one in both of those areas compared to, you see more on the East Coast and West Coast. It was soccer was number one. But then us over here in the Western region, basketball was number one.
Yeah. And, you know, Texas, Oklahoma, those places where football is life. Football should be, that's going to get you to the next phase of life, or that is life completely. Yeah. You got to play. I mean, how are you not going to play? How soon can you get back? And that is, here in Arizona, we saw some of that too, where we saw what I would label some of the less rational decision-making in terms of activities for kids.
And one of the things too, I was going to actually curious get your thoughts on, Ken, is that, you know, with one of the folks, you know, the groups that asking those parents that were, for the children, their children's participation that they're less favorable currently due to COVID is the groups that we found that really stood out was among mothers, Hispanics, non-college educated, household incomes under 50,000, Western region and more moderates. But it seems almost that, you know, what do you kind of make of those groups of, you know, mother, Hispanic, non-college educated, lower household income and more, you know, self-identified moderates?
And those were, to be clear, those are the ones that were
less favorable.
Yeah, we should not go back. I mean, the kids should not play.
They were higher pre-COVID, their sentiment, but then once COVID, it's caused some hesitation.
Hesitation for them, yeah. And those are, you know, mothers, right? That's where it's making sense to me. There's a mother place where it makes sense. You know, in terms of racial groups, I'm mm-hmm. not quite sure some of the thinking there. You know, we certainly have some old tropes about different races having different affinities towards different sports. So maybe you could tease out some of that and see what realities exist there. And regionally too, you really have to do a stitch work of, as I'm starting to try to do, where what sports are most important and see if there's a connector there. And yeah, most of those jump out to me, and I'm not surprised by any of them in any extraordinary way. You know, if fathers were pushing back against playing or that kind of thing would cut my teeth. Right.
And I guess one of the things I was looking at is that, you know, it's funny, and that's why I love the survey work, because again, it's kind of trying to figure out the why, what's driving this, what we make of it. And it's interesting. And I see, at least from my initial reaction is that, you know, initially, you know, kind of threw me off was the Hispanic portion, but not looking just directly at that, ethnicity, but looking at more at, you know, knowing that there is a proven, a difference between maybe income levels between, let's say, whites and non-whites, that, you know, is unfortunately some of the things we've seen in the hard data out there. But even though mothers, that makes sense. But then, you know, the groups of non-college educated, but also less household income, it seems that, you know, that family, that concern level seems to be higher, but it seems like almost there's a bit of a connection, it seems like, between, those that maybe less affluent, less income, potentially seems like there's, it seems like that is a bigger driver.
We've done a lot of work with one of our researchers in particular on Latina girls not participating in sports. So when I saw that's a, you know, further driver, there's a lack of participation anyway. So here's another reason not to participate. So some of those things, some little nuances jumped out at me as, yeah, that's affirmation of something that exists already.
It's almost like the pandemic could have possibly expedited that a little bit. So, pandemic, I can't have you going to football.
So when we did this poll, OH did this September 16th through September 20th. So a lot of youth sports had not started up. And now we're starting to see the reality of the decisions that are being made across school districts and teams. And especially here in Arizona, we now have, I count, four high school football teams that have now gone into quarantine as a result of either one or several players having COVID-19 illnesses or exposure. So when you look at the data of, 66% of parents are concerned, but yet there's a very large contingent, right? A third of parents probably that are out there who want to get back to sport, then they get back to sport and then all of this stuff happens. The reality hits that kind of feeling and that sentiment. What do you think happens in that moment, Ken, as parents are now going, I was right. I knew this was going to happen. And then you have the contingent of parents who are like, I don't know what you're talking about. I don't remember ever saying I wanted my kid to go back to sport. What do you think happens when reality comes to fruition?
Well, I think people are pretty good at processing information. I think there's a lot of, we were talking before we got started and at the beginning about the political atmosphere. There's a lot in the air about, what's real and what's not real. So some parents are influenced by different groups and, physicians, politicians, and otherwise, and they're looking for the reality. And I think once, Bobby on the team down the way has contracted COVID and hopefully not brings it home to grandma, there's a different reality in your mind than this scholarship is so important. I'm going to put my kid out there, and kids recover quickly anyway. So your reality can change based on the facts that you gather personally along the way.
And I think there's we saw it in the one of the biggest groups that stuck out when combing through the results was actually the vast differences on a perception between the 65 and older crowd and the 18 to 34 crowds. Even though it's interesting is that you see that among the younger age group, they're less concerned about it personally compared to the 65 plus that obviously more concerned, but they're also the most at risk when it comes to this very infectious virus, as we've seen even in, our nation's president and all their senior staff just got COVID. So again, if they can happen and we see, and now you're seeing kind of these super spreader, these spreader events type unfold, it really causes some hesitation. But, you know, we do see the younger folks are a little less, they take it serious, but they also know that they have a lot less risk compared to others.
So let's start moving up the field, so to speak, and we'll get into college football. College football is returning, even in a new COVID America, despite the fact that several conferences had initially decided that they were not going to return. We saw a reversal of that several weeks ago. And in the poll, our poll revealed that college football is America's second favorite sport behind professional football. So I thought that was interesting. 68% of people say they love pro football. It's in their top three. 56% say college football is in their top three. And then 51% say that professional baseball is in their top three. So with college football having such a huge support out there and a huge audience, we asked whether or not people were feeling anxious about college football again, which I don't have that feeling. I'm not that tied to college football, but 30% said that yes, that they would be likely to attend a college football game in the next 12 months behind professional baseball and football. And 49% of people say that they are likely to watch a college football game on TV or stream it in non-in-person methods. So with that, actions are now being taken by the NCAA and college sport conferences in terms of COVID-19. And we asked, knowing that schools and athletes could easily have access to daily rapid COVID-19 results, 51% of our respondents said that they either are more comfortable with college sport returning as a result of this testing scheme. Only 10% were made less comfortable. And males, those under 44, Hispanics, African Americans were made especially comfortable knowing that testing was in place. So it seems to be a kind of a consistent theme across the board, not just in sport, but when there's more testing overall, and despite whether or not you use that testing, but when there's testing in place, that people feel more comfortable returning to sport. What do you think that idea or level of comfort in knowing that college athletes are being tested either daily or on weekly basis to return to sport means for people being able to actually then watch the sport and enjoy it?
You know, I think, how much credit are we giving the nation for being sophisticated enough to understand what increased rapid testing means? And I think, thank you to the White House. I think we all know, okay, it's not just testing. Testing is not the cure. Testing doesn't prevent the disease. Testing allows for tracing and follow-up and all the things that are necessary. So I think I'm going to give the nation more credit than maybe on the surface we could see that some places have, because there's a lot of comfort, I think, as opposed to being less comfortable with increased testing. I mean, and it also, there is a correlation too, especially if we declare the Southern region the king of football, college and pro. I mean, that is the most comfortable region with more rapid testing. I'm still, I'm flummoxed or not certain about the African American number. I mean, I think, not a longtime polar myself. I always think of the African American population, contrary to what some beliefs may be, as being more conservative on so many issues, abortion, everything else. So this is one where I'm surprised at 68%.
I'm curious if that, Ken, because, you know, you, I mean, you, this is your jam, so to speak, when it comes to sport. And I could probably try the next 30 years. I probably wouldn't know half as much as you know on it. And I'm curious, do you think possibly it might be due to, since, you know, maybe in some of the major sports, you know, African-Americans are also, you know, the players themselves. I mean, there's obviously a large portion of players compared to, you know, coaches and some of the, maybe the corporate staff, you know, it seems to be leans a little bit heavier to a white or Caucasian. And so I'm curious if maybe because it's higher, that concern is that they want to feel maybe protected because, again, having those, like, I'm assuming they would, they don't mind playing and being, you know, and doing, you know, what they do that, you know, in the sports arena. But, you know, do you think it possibly because, you know, they want to see those in place? Like, are they looking out for my safety or are they just trying
I'm going to give you a new term, wishful thinking correlation. Mm-hmm. You know, if you look at the NCAA data on who's playing college football now, mm-hmm. Just about every demographic is going down except for African Americans, and it there's a strong thought that the decline in participation in football overall is because of concussions and brain related damage. Mm-hmm. You know, and you can draw a line and say, you know, you sort of take boxing, the history of boxing, and who historically has participated in boxing, mm-hmm. largely immigrant, largely the poorest communities. Mm-hmm. So you can say that's why the African community stays engaged in it, and that's also why largely white and wealthier communities, other than quarterbacks, which is another story, tend to pull away from it. So, you know, if you look at this huge number of African Americans being more comfortable, wishful thinking. I mean, I hope this rapid testing means that my decision to stay engaged in this sport and to have family members engaged in this sport or relatives or people I know to kind of connect with what you're saying, Mike. But there, you know, you know, I'm sure the one thing that you learn in this, we all know as we think about this stuff, you know, these communities aren't monoliths. So I'm not certain how much of that has to do with it, but that's, you know, that's one strand that could help us get there.
100%. And it was funny. The last thing is, and that circle back when we were talking about the president of the United States, you know, the top leadership position, you know, got not only COVID, but the senior staff, and you see that spread. And I think what's fascinating is that, you know, with this this unique issue, this unique virus that is very infectious. And I think clearly we saw just how infectious and how quickly it can spread. And it's funny that the Secret Service, which I think has a pretty stellar track record, right? Their job is to protect the president. They couldn't even protect him against this COVID issue. And so, you know, these mitigation strategies, it seems that, you know, getting ahead of it, the contact tracing, again, just trying to following these best practices and following the science, but, you know, lead to a better comfortability. But I think if anyone was, so, you know, questioning whether how fast this, you know, virus can spread, I think they have to be a believer by now because it's
well, crazy. Your response goes to polling overall. I mean, if we polled even the same question the day before it was announced that the president contracted the virus while he's hospitalized. And then, you know, how does it change yet again when he announces I'm cured? I mean, so what do these big moments mean to people, especially those in the Shropshire paradox of the wishful thinking paradox?
Rumor has it there's going to be a vaccine coming out on November 3rd. Rumor has it.
Yes, you put in your ballot and out comes out like
a
carnival. Yeah, the vaccine
only,
comes back. Yeah,
you vote the right way.
Yes. there might be some small fine print in there. So.
Mike, could you expand a little bit about that? I mean, you know, when you do a poll is done effectively, it's a snapshot, right? A moment in time.
Yes. Yes.
And to Ken's point, if we had posed that question the day before the president announced that he had COVID-19, then, you know, while he's literally being, you know, marined one into Walter Reed, and then now, you know, post he is, I'm cured. What would you say is what could be the potential variance and point swings between those kind of three events?
Well, and that's the thing, is that it's interesting when polling around these bigger events. So whether it's a big announcement like, you know, the unfortunate passing of Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg, among many other just frankly terrible things that have happened in 2020, I think it's a year we're all looking forward to forgetting, I think, for a little while. And we see when polling, obviously, with this issue, and the president of the United States gets it, and of course, especially taking the position that he did of, hey, we're going to get through this. This is no big deal. We're fantastic. And then, he gets it really sets him back. What we see with polling with these big events is that you'll typically see a bit of a initial like a wave or boost just because it's so fresh and so surprising at that time. And typically you'll see the numbers will increase. But so like, for example, comfort level, if we were, this poll, we have the results, but it is a snapshot in time, or think of it as like a temperature check. So temperature at the time was probably, your average 98.6 degrees. However, you have something like this happen. If you were to temperature check again or poll, you would probably get maybe, a 99 degrees or maybe 100 degrees, right? But I'd say typically with these bigger events, I like to give it about at least a week, sometimes 2 weeks, just because let the folks, so they get the initial shock of the initial information, right? But usually it's just a headline soundbite. They don't really have all the information, but also then the pundits and everybody will, dissect it, break it down. And once they're breaking down, they get their views, whether it's from NPR, Fox News, CNN, mixture of all three. And, and they kind of then come of what they ultimately make of it. But that's really, we find more of the true sentiment afterwards, about a week or so. But the thing is, what we can't predict is when. So these large, like, okay, when are you going to predict? Oh, we have murder hornets now in 2020. And it's like, you can't predict these things, frankly, that we've seen this year. I mean, I call 2020 as the year of the upside down world currently. But yes, we see that in the polling, these up and downs. But that's the thing, is that just having a pulse, tracking it over time, and then really digging into the why behind it. It just, again, if you don't have the tracking, you don't know where the numbers are moving, and to see how that is or is not affecting sentiment and perception among public. Because perception is whether, and again, when we were measuring opinions, right, or opinions of people, is that this is opinions, but this is their perception compared to, does that conform with the actual reality that is happening, which those can actually be very divergent at points.
Right. And as we saw at the beginning of the return of sport, the majority of teams and leagues decided to not have fans in the stands. We just saw the WNBA finish up. We're in the midst of the NBA finals, no fans in the stands. Major League Baseball, up until and still right now during their playoffs, have no fans in the stands. But late last week, Major League Baseball did announce that a limited number of fans will be able to attend the National League Championship Series and World Series, which this year will be held in Texas. And one of the questions that we asked, we must have been Nostradamus asking this question, would you feel comfortable attending the World Series if you were given a ticket? And we'll talk about the number, kind of the split. But then we see, again, these kind of regional divides. But 49% of attendants said that they would attend Major League Baseball, the World Series, if they were given a ticket and other high-level sporting events. But 51% would not. So literally, when I looked at this and I saw the blue and red come back, I felt like I was looking at an election poll. So Mike, what would you say is the, and we can kind of break it down, and you do break it down in terms of age, as well as political affiliation, this kind of clear divide between half of America that would want to participate in sport and attend a sporting event, and half that probably would not.
And it's interesting. It was funny. And for jumping on that, is that I was looking up real quickly is the average price, you know, because think about it, you got a ticket to the World Series or the Super Bowl. I mean, who wouldn't want to go to that? And you look at not only the, you see what this effect has had of this, you know, this new issue that we're going through. You just look at, you know, follow the money. Sometimes the average ticket price last year at the World Series, the average was about roughly $2,000 if you round up. And right now the ticket price, which again, there's less seats even too. So now there is more a scarcity and it's only $979 average seat. So you see already that that impact, but also when you look at some of the demographics is that it was the who would attend where was highest, which was probably not gonna be a surprise, a younger American. But again, of course they are less at risk when it comes to this. And but it also then we see it precipitously decrease as you go up in age. So we do see that correlation there. Also between adults 18 to 34 year olds, 56% were more likely to attend than those 65 plus. So a massive difference between the youngest and oldest demographic groups in the age population. I guess finally, men are 28 points more likely to attend than women. They clearly are, you know, more, I guess, less have less hesitation of going. But also, we see this also, again, this shows the political nature of it. Republicans are 16 points more likely to attend than Democrats. But what we've seen in public opinion polling, for example, here in Arizona right now, if you were to ask how concerned, it's about, I don't know, average, it's about 59% overall the top line. But while we look into the party affiliation breakdown, 9 out of 10 Democrats are either extremely moderately concerned, independent, so those folks in the middle, 6 out of 10. And then you got Republicans, 25% or 1 out of 4. So again, we see that massive. So we know that there is a very much different perception, also scarcity of it. But again, you see that bleeding into, again, of who's more likely to attend or not based on their concern level of COVID.
And Ken, I already know the answer to this. If you were given that ticket, I know you're not going.
Can I have the ticket?
What's that?
Can I have the ticket?
Can you have the ticket?
Hey, I'm still a capitalist. I'll sell it to you.
Well, I won't pay more than $979.
So
Google is telling me.
I mean, Ken, what do you? Sport in general, right, is a communal experience. Everyone wants to be able to go to the, you know, to the park and into the field and to be a part of, you know, community. And we've now been in this pandemic going on now 7 months. Do you think there's this pent up kind of energy out there that people are just looking for a place and a space to go? And given the fact that now protocols are in place, spacing's in place, you know, some sports have returned and we haven't seen people at least directly getting sick as a result of participating or going to an event. But when you literally have half the country kind of saying, yes, I would want to go back to sport, to some sort of high level sporting event. What do you think that says about the moment that we're in?
Well, again, this is one I want to watch, and as the country gets better, hopefully, to see the correlation with this number of people that want to attend. It, you know, this one again, my main focus ended up going to the regions. Just about everything else was, as Mike was saying, in some ways, kind of what you would predict. I mean, older people no, younger people yes. I'll go. I'm invincible. Sort of that kind of thing. The Global Sport Institute is not a, you know, politics based institute. So the Democratic Republican stuff is always to me just curious when we get that answer. I mean, that's a kind of a standard polling kind of piece of information. So I'm, but it is, again, as I said earlier, it is kind of trending towards what the political leaders of the respective parties would tell you to do. I mean, if you know, the President Trump holding these mass public rallies, that's a sporting event. I mean, that's the same. So there's a comfort level that you've been conveyed by your political leadership that it's okay where Joe Biden's in his basement. So there is that too. Again, if we're going to try, you know, but we can't say that's the dominant piece that drives people. I mean, we also in the polling asked how people view sport overall, and I, you know, as I read this, I went back to look to make sure that people at least had a TV set. I can't, you know, in my mind, why are you going to go if you can watch it on TV? Although, you know, phones, whatever the modern way to watch these things, flat screen. So, but the surprising thing, you know, there was that pent up, as you asked, Andrew, kind of, I want to see sport, you know, and people remember that moment when people were watching the Korean baseball organization and they were watching these baseball from Taiwan and all this people uh-huh. were training to find this stuff. Then finally we got sport back. Think of the draft too, the NFL draft, what a huge number that was. Now there is a bit of a decline going on. So maybe, Andrew, there's something to what you're saying that, okay, I've seen it now. I want to get back there. Back
right. There. And what you're referring to, Ken, is I'm assuming what you're referring to are the Nielsen numbers coming back on people watching sports.
Right.
And it seems that across the board, not just in the NBA, but across the board, all sports are seeing a decline in TV viewership. So,
and you know, one of my questions on that, maybe the next poll, we'll see where we are, is, I mean, when I still watch a fair amount of sports. The, you know, the canned fan thing, the it's more, it reminded me more and more of 50s, 60s sitcoms with the, you know, the laugh track and all that sort of thing. I mean, I don't know why it's driving me, you know, so it's gotten me to the, you know, volume off. I don't want to, but then they show the, you know, the cardboard cutouts, which I'm tired of. So there is an evolution in the broadcast that may have to take place to bring people back in.
And, you know, if I don't mind adding to that, so one of the things we saw in research and also other research is that especially when it comes to that in-person attendance of these professional or collegiate sports, right, which, you know, like University of Nebraska, massive stadium, and they've been sold out forever, right? And well, what we realized or we kind of uncovered is that it's a lot of it, when they're attending in person, obviously it's part of their team. Like the diehard fans, you're going to have that group of diehard fans. They're going to come no matter what. But that other bulk that is actually the majority compared to the diehards that will go, whether or not, is actually more for that experience that you experience. So going, you know, to the big game and you have the pregame stuff where you have all the folks in the parking lot grilling out and you have your spot, you park in and you talk with the other folks. But what this COVID aspect has really, I think, disrupted and for frankly good reasons, we've seen of how quickly this can spread in large groups is, you know, when you're getting around larger folks. But of course, when you're at that experience and you're, let's say, grilling out and everything and you got a mask on, again, it's just different for folks. And it's a little, you know, again, so we see, I think that's also part of it as well that's affecting it. But then so instead of going to the game, you know, you're seeing this huge movement to, again, people watching it from their home now as well. But of course, some folks that are not watching it at home, I think was likely or what we'd look into more is that, you know, is it more because of that experience? I mean, that's why they were going. They're not, I mean, not such a huge fan. They just love going to the big event with the loud crowds, all that stuff. But again, that experience is different now in this new era we're in.
And sidebar for all of us, I've got a Zoom viewing party of the Lakers game. What is it, tonight, whenever it is, which is also a bachelor party. So I'll be giving full report on that. A 65-year-old man's bachelor party via Zoom during the Laker game, which probably will be watch the Laker game, drink beer.
Bed by 9.
And man talk.
I was going to say, yeah, and half of them will be asleep. by the second quarter.
that's sports viewing now, right?
that's a show that needs to be on Twitch right there.
And that was interesting. But in the last part is that just with the, you know, the political part, the reason I know, and again, us being nonpartisan and being that, again, staying away from especially politics now, it's very much a full contact sport. And it's kind of the decorum has declined, I think, compared to previous times. But again, there's just a lot of factors in play right now. And what we've seen, though, like even look at on economics, for example, you would think when it comes to finances, money, things like that, you would think political ideology really won't have an effect. And it was interesting when you look at the conference board's consumer index, which essentially a pulse on consumer confidence, or University of Michigan's consumer index. It started about a decade or so ago. But for example, like when Obama got elected in 2008, so it switched from a Republican to a Democrat, you see that their views or sentiment about future economic outlook is that Republicans were very much favorable, Democrats not much, but of course Republicans had that highest seat. And then election happened and you saw a massive change in slid, where Republicans all suddenly soured and Democrats were now very much higher. And that's where, as much as, you know, not talking about politics, I just at least seeing if it can affect you know, finances, we're seeing effect in a lot of these other ways. It just seems that some of this hyper partisanship that we're seeing is really affecting, you know, people are starting to ignore, I think, the facts.
And finally, one of the things that came out of our poll was seeing that Americans were divided when it came to their opinions on race in professional sports. So we saw this summer lots of calls for racial justice across the country. We're in a presidential election year. And then we saw professional sport leagues and teams put out statements about race. Athletes themselves became involved in these statements, as well as doing protests themselves, using their own platforms to make statements to inspire action. And some fans have embraced those messages, while others have preferred that sport is a non-political zone, right? You do not bring politics into my sport. So we asked a couple of questions about race and sport in America, and some highlights from what we saw was that African Americans were more likely to support a team with a black quarterback versus whites, who said that they were more likely to say that race had no effect in their response. Older respondents were less likely to say whether an African-American quarterback would affect their support of a team. Football fans in general were more likely to support a team if there was an African-American quarterback. And then the NFL is the only sport league whose race and equality statements have been heard by the majority of our respondents, not just those who like the league. So 66% say that they have a favorable view of the NFL as opposed to 41%. And then finally, young people and African Americans are more willing to believe that race was an advantage in the hiring of Steve Nash. As we saw, Steve Nash was hired to become the next head coach for the Brooklyn Nets. So when we break this all down, looking at race, the political year, the heightened sense of awareness around race as a result of what happened to George Floyd and Breonna Taylor and so many unfortunate other countless names, what does that say about the intertwining of race and sport in America, Ken?
Yeah, this to me is polling at its best in terms of trying to get at an issue without asking it directly. The old, you know, Henry David Thoreau quote, men go fishing all their life without realizing it's not fish that they're seeking, something like that. you've got to ask. You can't say, are you a racist? I mean, you can't go at it directly. So right. These two questions really give the respondents a chance to give us an idea of what they're thinking about issues. And, you know, and it's not 100% either. It's not 100% you say this, you're racist, you say this, you're not. It's really deeper than that. I mean, this is one where we also got, you know, kind of, to me, the surprise revelation to me in some sense was the 65-year-olds on the Steve Nash question, 65 plus, saying it's not, you know, race is not an issue. Sort of not acknowledging the presence of race, which again, if we try to extrapolate way out there with this, much further, be full HD Thoreau kind of thinking on this. Isn't that the problem that we have with the older generation, is they won't engage with the issue and won't identify it where it exists? I mean, that in some senses is the bigger piece that it was able to pull out of. It's also kind of, I don't know, in some sense you might say with the black quarterback response, maybe it's kind of refreshing in some sense, or maybe the translation is, I want Lamar Jackson, the football player, on my team that I would go if we didn't have this big galoot playing quarterback, if we had somebody else. So I don't know. And clearly, we could ask now, you know, related kind of Thoreau question would be about Dwayne Haskins, and you know, he's been benched, and some would argue that he's doing pretty well. And would the same thing happen to a white quarterback? To figure a way, again, this is what Mike and his team do so well, to phrase that question so it's not one where you're saying, I'm a racist or I'm not. So that's really what those couple of questions did for me, was to, they really wants to ponder, again, you do all the demographic slicing and dicing, and you get a bigger view of how people see race in America through sports.
And I think, you know, to continue on that, you know, when we, for example, the two questions of the kind of the hot button or recent kind of issues on race and sport is the when we look at the, you know, if you have African American quarterback, would the, you know, would that affect your support for the team? And one of the interesting things that I saw in what I think, you know, basically among 18 to 34 year olds, you had about a plus 23 point margin among that would have they'd be more likely to support. And you see it really drops for down from age. You look then at the 35 to 44 year olds, it's only plus 12, but then it's really starts shrinking. 45 to 54, it's 6%. Plus six, and then 55, 64, plus seven. But then you get to 65 plus, only 1%. And I think one of the things that we've been starting to see, which is very new, because remember, internet, I came up where we didn't have internet, but we had then first a thing where you could dial out on your phone, and you hope no one picks up the line while you're on the internet, otherwise it'll knock you off. And if you didn't put the, what I call the call block thing, someone would call and knock you off, and then you get mad at them when you shouldn't. Because anyway, so I grew up in that, but then we had the internet. Now it's incredible, but they have this younger generation that grew up with internet's a thing. They never knew what life was without an internet or a phone in their hand that has a camera that can take better pictures than maybe a professional photographer's camera. And it's basically a supercomputer in the palm of your hand. But again, that's just normal for them. And I think that we see social movements, this advent of social media, this ability to connect and also put information out. And I think social movements is the thing to watch. And I almost look at, especially with BLM and everything else, kind of, you know, the race tensions higher, I think, and it's really was widespread being pushed on social media. And I almost, that is that impacting 18 to 34 sentiment, but you know, whether it's the Me Too movement to BLM, it seems social movements, I would say, is probably, you know, might be one of the drivers of why it's affecting them so much more compared to these other age groups.
Yeah, Mike. As a matter of fact, we covered the issue specifically in our reset of college sport, digital issue for Global Sport Matters. And we've seen a lot of college players who are very comfortable speaking their opinions and using their platforms to tell their stories. And then the kind of response from colleges and universities, which inherently, you know, leadership is older, right? So more of a generational divide, and them trying to kind of figure out how they handle the situation. So, you know, Mike, I wonder if there is something that you could extrapolate. And last night we saw during the vice presidential debate, Mike Pence's response to a question about race. Mm-hmm. And the net of it was that he effectively did not believe that that there is systemic racism within the United States, versus Kamala Harris's response, which was, are you kidding me? Like, you know, I can clearly see that there is race in this. So, let's just say that sport is a microcosm of the world, right? It's a little bit of a niche of the world, but when you kind of take a step back and the work that you've been doing on the research side, what has been that response generationally to race in America, whether it's sport or politics? Is there a commonality between the two?
Well, yeah, basically, you know, and it's this interesting one. And we're, you know, obviously, you know, myself, I'm a white male. And again, but what at least I've seen from experience, and again, I don't know if it's right, wrong, or indifferent. Like me personally, ask, hey, Mike, I personally do not feel whatsoever. I feel very open-minded, and it seems like, you know, some folks, but I think a lot of what drives people is their experience. I mean, if you were growing up, like for me, I don't know any better than being a white male. Okay. Good, bad, or different. That's just what I was born. I can't adjust that. Right. And so again, where things are. And so for myself, I only know based on my experiences, but also talking to other folks, but we all know if you have a personal experience or you hear from other folks, again, that will have a larger impact. And obviously I think what this has brought to the surface is that if you do look at the hard numbers or the facts of whether it's amount of arrests or incidental shootings, things of that nature, it's again, I think the ones that have been affected, you're seeing that driver. But again, that for folks to say, like, I don't think many people are going to say, hey, are you racist? Of course, most I don't think are going to say no to someone, let alone a stranger, etc. And so I think they don't think that is, but again, of course, I don't know if they've had the personal experiences to really drive that. And again, not saying that's right, wrong, or indifferent. And that's kind of the thing I've been kind of pontificating and kicking around again of why that is. And again, I kind of lean, at least at the moment, to it's more, experiences. Like if I haven't walked, frankly, a day in, let's say an African-American youth groups in a very, let's say in the, urban area, the burbs of Oakland, California, again, it's tougher, I'd say, to get exposed to that. But I think, people should know, because it seems to me, at least, that, some just, again, they don't just view it as such, but again, doesn't mean it's not happening.
And Ken, final question on Steve Nash. So Steve was hired as head coach of the Brooklyn Nets, and some have criticized the Nets for hiring Nash, who is a white former NBA player right here, hometown of Phoenix. He's had no coaching experience. And at a time when there are very few African American head coaches in the NBA, and especially with everything that's going on, some people say, well, hey, he's played 18 seasons. He deserves it. He should be there. I know this is something that we at the Global Sport Institute are tracking. We tracked it in the NFL. We just tracked it at the NCAA Power Five head coaching positions at D1 schools in football. This kind of continual, repeating history and over and over again, where someone with less experience, no coaching experience whatsoever, now is given a head coaching position. What do you think this, where does this leave us in this continuing conversation around race and leadership in sport?
Well, Steve Nash, by all accounts, is a great candidate. Hopefully will be a great coach for a great town, great team. But what we saw this in the NFL with hiring Joe Judge, we saw it with the hiring of the head coach at the Cleveland Browns, that the standards are not always uniform. The requirements are not always uniform. And in some sense, it's just exposed in these moments that, you've never hired the league, never hired a person of color with those same qualifications. Or there are plenty of people of color now finally in what's, I hate to use the reference, in the pipeline that are no longer seem to be the right candidates. That this is now the standard that may be in place. So it's just something to keep an eye on. I mean, we never know how decisions are made or why they're made. We don't know what goes on in people's minds. So that's why, for example, in NFL, the focus has been on the process more than the outcomes. And was there a process that had the big funnel that let in as many candidates as possible for consideration?
So Mike, I'll give you the last word on the conversation today. So we are I just had it in front of me. We're 26 days from the election. But in many places across the country, the election has started, right, with early voting here in Arizona. So you're doing this work right now. You're doing polling across the country. You know, again, you are a nonpartisan group, but just your kind of general thoughts on what we're going to see these next 26 days. And once election day does come, and who knows how long it'll take to actually officially certify who the next president's going to be. That's a debate that remains to be seen. What do you think we'll see?
I think right now, I think we're at this fever high pitch, and I just hope, you know, we're able to get through this one unscathed from now until after the election. Again, we are a democracy. And again, the votes, I mean, whether you, it's whether or not you agree with the result is what it is. It's you, everyone has the ability to vote, to turn out, et cetera. Everyone has to play by the same rules. And at the end of the day, you have to respect the process that's built on. If we undermine the integrity or the process, it's kind of hard to, you know, again, it's really hard to run a country on that, I would say, at least at what we've been used to seeing. And so I don't know, at least for me, I think it's a lot of, hopefully a lot of this will dissipate, because I see a lot of things. It's like this tornado in politics, and it's just sucking in things like sport. It's sucking in things like racial divisions. They're not only opening, but maybe exacerbating at certain points. And so, again, I think this hyper-partisanship is really just affecting all aspects of life. But that's where, at least for us, and what I can say, though, too, is if the election were held today, there is a low chance Donald Trump would land up being our president, just because of recent events and everything else. And it's all about the road to 270 in the electorate right now. And but again, it's been just a whirlwind of a year. And so it's definitely, the die is not a cast, but what we're priming up to see, I think we'll be a much faster back to normal once the election is over, I believe, because I think a lot of this, hopefully, partisanship will be tempered back, and we can focus on these core issues of getting back to sport and getting back to, I think, a sense of normalcy that I think we all are looking for.
Well, until then, it's a duality. Last night, I literally had the debate on one screen. And then I had the Yankees, Tampa Bay Rays, game three of the ALDS on another screen. So until this is all over, sport and politics will be intertwined. Ken, thanks so much for being on the show.
Thank you, Andrew.
Thanks, and Mike, good luck with the rest of the political season.
I survive.
Hopefully we'll see you on the other side. And we will be doing these polling, Global Sport Institute national polls, snapshot polls quarterly. So Mike will be back on again in the future. So thanks, Mike, again, for being on the show.
Thank you so much. It was an honor, a privilege, and all the work that you all are doing over there, I think, is incredibly important. And I think it's providing more insight and figuring out the truth and the why behind things. So thank you for all that you're doing over there.
Once again, that was Ken Shropshire, CEO of the Global Sport Institute, and Mike Noble, Chief Pollster and Managing Partner of OH Predictive Insights. We've put a link to the Global Sport Institute National Snapshot Poll in our show notes. To stay up to date on the latest from the Global Sport Matters team, be sure to follow us on Twitter. We're at Global Sport MTRS. And be sure to sign up for our newsletter by going to our website and clicking on the envelope icon on the top right-hand corner. That's at globalsportmatters.com. The Global Sport Matters podcast is a production of the Global Sport Institute. This episode was produced by me, Andrew Ramsamy. Our manager of marketing and communications is Crisal Valencia. Our manager of events and programs is Kendall Jones. Our marketing and communications assistants are Sage Piccolotti and Julia O'Connell. Our special projects assistant is Katie Cross. Well, that'll do it for this episode. Thank you so much for listening, and until next time, be well.